This is Jim Peek at MySuccessGateway.com, and today I've got a fantastic interview with human behavior expert Patrick Wanis, PhD. And Patrick, we're here to talk today about the mishap in Arizona at James Arthur Ray's sweat lodge that went awry.
Yeah, and I think it's important, Jim, to first clarify a couple of misconceptions, because a lot of people that have been reading about this online or maybe watching it on TV or listening to it on radio thought that the entire retreat was just a sweat lodge, thinking that people paid $10,000 to attend a 2.5 hour sauna. And there's much more to it than that. What we need to understand is that James Arthur Ray was one of the teachers of The Secret. He's one of the proponents of the law of attraction. He's also a New York Times best-selling author. His book was Creating Harmonic Wealth in All Areas of Your Life. Now, he was promoting and selling a spiritual warrior retreat where the whole concept is that you'll die and be reborn and you'll come out a whole new person and you'll create even more wealth in every area of your life. And he did, as far as I understand, promote the concept too, that you'd be making a lot of money. And what's interesting is the people that attended this retreat weren't the average person that we would think would be easily brainwashed. Now, we tend to think, well, the average person is gullible. The average person is easily persuaded. The average person is easily motivated by greed or they're lost. But we're actually talking here about highly educated and highly successful people. Now, that doesn't mean that they're superior in intelligence or superior to the average person, but it means that hopefully they've had a lot more life experience, so they might be a little more discerning. So we're talking about some of these seekers as doctors, engineers, salespeople, small business owners, and other professionals, and they each paid, Jim, $10,000 to be part of this retreat. Now, the trial has begun, and there's a couple of key points here. And the first key point is the testimonials that are coming out that are revealing more of the details that you and I spoke about when this first occurred back in 2009. And that is that these participants were willing to shave their heads, meditate in the desert for 36 hours without food and water so that they could symbolically die and be reborn in the sweat lodge ritual.
So this was like a mental and physical rebirth.
Well, yeah, definitely, it's definitely going to be a physical rebirth in the sense, well, not in the sense of the body dying and then you being reborn,
right.
But there is definitely a detoxification, a physical detoxification that occurs in a sweat lodge. Number two, particularly for people that didn't hear our first call, and they can find that on your website and mine, that the sweat lodge is not a sauna. It's a Native American ritual that has been around for hundreds of years. And the Native American sweat lodge ritual is done as a spiritual ritual as well as a physical detoxification, but it's always and only led by Native American Indians. It's not designed for profit, and it's not about physical sweating.
Yep, so I've actually done two of them myself.
Yes, you and I talked about this before, and I have too. So share with me your experience.
Yeah, well, my experience was, you know, in both cases they were very good, and in both cases, you know, I had the ability to voluntarily leave if I felt uncomfortable, and both experiences, like you said, were led by Native Americans, and they seemed to know what they were doing. So, but it was a very much of a cleansing, you know, a detoxification experience. For several days, you know, eating healthy foods and then hydrating and then sweating out the impurities in your body.
And I recall that in our first interview, Jim, you and I went over some of the key mistakes that James Ray made in the way that he led just this sweat lodge in itself. And that first mistake was that he had people fasting without food and water for 36 hours, and then drinking water on the day of or the morning of the ritual. Anyone that understands anything about basic fitness and hydration understands that you don't hydrate your body a couple hours before an event. You hydrate your body by leading up to the event. That means you are drinking water and hydrating your muscles days before the event, not the opposite. The idea is not to dehydrate yourself, it's actually to hydrate yourself. So in the rituals that you and I did, and I mean, we didn't do them together, but you know, I know we went had the same experience.
Right.
The idea is that you're meant to drink a lot of water leading up to the event. So that's
days before, yeah. One place they said drink it days before, and the other place I was up at Harbin Hot Springs, which is nothing more than, you know, a water city. And they had all different kinds of spring water there, and everybody was hydrating, you know, the entire time. It was wonderful.
You know, and this is a mistake. You'll often see people walking down the beach. Well, when I was living in Miami, I'd see people walking down the beach, and they're walking or they're running, and they carry bottles of water with them. And that's fine to quench your thirst, but for actual health purposes, your muscles need to be hydrated well before the event, unless you're doing a marathon and you're trying to get a little bit of hydration. But when you're engaging in intense exercise, the idea is not to drink lots of water, which, in fact, if you are engaging in intense exercise and you drink water, it can actually lead to vomiting. But let's put that aside. Having said that, the key point about this, about the testimony coming out in the trial of James Arthur Ray, is that these people felt that they were intimidated by him, they were afraid of him, and they were really concerned with pleasing him. And that's what's really interesting to me, because that raises other key points. One of the witnesses talked about that Jennifer Haley was a volunteer from California. She was a member of what Ray called the Dream Team, and she talked about one of the participants who ended up dying, and she said, choosing to go in the sweat lodge, I believe she had something to prove to James Ray. I believe that her feeling shameful absolutely had everything to do with her dying in that sweat lodge. And what's coming out of this testimony is that many people were seeking his approval. Many people were afraid of him or intimidated by him. And we talked at the beginning about this concept of dying and being reborn. And that was some of the very words that James Ray talked about. He actually talked about dying and being reborn. And apparently, the five-day seminar began with lectures, starting with viewing the film The Last Samurai, goal setting, quiet time for reflection, and journal keeping. And apparently on the first day, Jim, participants were asked to shave their heads or at least crop their hair short in a symbolic gesture that they were letting go of their vanity, even though it said it was optional. By the end of the week, 41 of the 50-something participants had cut their hair. Interestingly, one of the orthodontists, a Texas orthodontist, by the name of, and I'm just looking it up here, Beverly Bunn, was the last to lose her hair, and she said she'd held out until right before the Sweat Lodge ceremony, despite Ray's prodding with comments such as, are you hiding behind your hair? What does that have to do with your identity? And apparently as the activities increased, on the third day, a code of silence was imposed, and at the samurai game, James Arthur Ray wore white and literally played God, ordering his black-robed death angels to strike dead anyone who spoke or disobeyed his instructions. Participants who died had to lie still on the cold floor, sometimes for hours, and did not get dinner. And that was according to testimony. So here, Jim, my point is, to look at it from both sides. True TV, which has that covers a lot of these trials, they have a program called In Session, and they came to me asking me for my opinions about both James Arthur Ray and the participants, and saying, well, is James Arthur Ray a criminal? Are these people also responsible and accountable? In this case, both people are responsible and accountable. James Arthur Ray led the program. He led the workshop, and these people let him do more than just lead. They let him decide what they would do and what they wouldn't do. And Jim, this is the key point that I want to make, that we need to be careful when we're seeking other people's approval, when we're trying to please other people it is very easy for us to go beyond our integrity. I'm not even talking about endangering our life. I'm talking first about our integrity. We all experience this starting as kids. And this is what parents need to teach their children. You recall at school, and how old is your son now, Jim?
My son is 11.
He's 11 years of age, so he's already experiencing this at school, and it's pretty obvious. It's the peer group pressure, where kids will say to you, do this, or don't do that. And that's how kids get into smoking cigarettes, that's how they get into drugs, that's how they get into criminal behavior, because they're seeking approval. They want to be liked. They want to be accepted. They want to belong. They want to be part of the wider community. They don't want to feel isolated. They don't want to feel outcast. They don't want to feel alone. But the key point here is that this desire to get people's approval, to be liked, to be accepted, this fear of, if I stand up, the leader, the guru, the teacher, the professor, my boss, my colleagues will shame me, humiliate me, or embarrass me in front of everyone else. Which is obviously one of the things that this witness was implying when she said that James Ray was prodding her to cut her hair. And my point here, Jim, is that the first thing we need to do, particularly as parents, is teach our children to be aware of falling into peer pressure. That's number one. Number two, we need to remind ourselves of that every day when someone says, do you do this or don't do this? The third thing is to become clear about what are your values, your principles, and what are your limits. What will you or won't you do? Now, as you know, Jim, because you and I have done many podcasts together, and also based on my teachings and my books and my CDs and my programs, I do encourage you to try and move beyond your limits. I do encourage you to step out of your comfort zone. I do encourage you to reach and realize your full potential. But in each moment, you also have to know, is this dangerous and does this go against my integrity?
Yep.
So if someone's saying to you, you can't leave the tent or the sweat lodge, and you feel that you're about to die, it doesn't matter what anyone's going to say. Or you feel sick, or you think, I can't handle it. There are times you push yourself, and there are times when you have to say, I know my own body, or I know myself. But the same applies even to our morals and values, Jim, because we're always in a situation where people are telling us what to do. They're encouraging us to come join the crowd. Now, in Los Angeles, you can be at a party. I mean, this can happen in any city, but particularly in Hollywood, you can be at a party and all these other producers, directors, and actors, and people in the showbiz industry will encourage you to do the drugs or to partake of whatever they're partaking. And only if you really are strong and you know that your identity and your value is not determined by what other people think of you, then and only then will you be able to stand up and say no. And they go, come on. I go, no, thank you. Well, what's wrong with you? I say, I don't need it. I don't want it, and I don't have to explain it to you. And the point here is that, and I've repeated this a number of times by saying the point here is, to understand when to say no and how to say no. In our first interview, Jim, you and I talked about this at great length, the danger of gurus, and that is when we give our power to someone else, when we place someone on a pedestal. When we place someone on a pedestal, we make them a guru. We're saying, you are better than me, you are smarter than me, you know more than me, I'm going to listen to everything you say, I'm going to set out to get your approval. There is a difference between the teacher and the teaching. Look at the teaching, but keep seeking the truth. Is what this guy is teaching truth? There might be some truth in it, but is it all truth? And at what point do you say no?
Yeah, well, I think in his case, it might have been that, you know, he was on that movie, The Secret, and so therefore it became, you know, a little bit bigger than life, and The Secret was such a well-received movie that maybe they didn't see that they were starstruck by that. Who knows?
Well, you're talking about two different things now. Obviously, you're right. There's going to be people who see him as a New York Times bestselling author. There's people that see him as a person that's being featured on The Secret as a teacher, so they make him a guru. They see him as someone who promotes himself as extremely successful. Look, I've got a $5 million home in Beverly Hills. I know how to create harmonic wealth. The brochure talked about, I have all these secrets. You know, I have all this that I can share with you. That's number one. But number two is, what actually happened to James Ray? You have to say to yourself, if this is a guy that promotes harmonic wealth in all areas of your life, including spiritual, what does it mean to have spiritual harmonic wealth? What does that really mean? Does it mean having a home in Beverly Hills? Does it mean having a lot of money in your bank? Does it mean having power over other people? Or does it mean serving other people? And each one of us has to make our own decision about what does it mean to have spiritual wealth. But we also need to ask the following questions. This is a teacher of the law of attraction. How did he attract this to himself? How did he attract not just the death of other people, but the fact that he is potentially going to go to jail for decades? He's up on charges of manslaughter. That's number one. Number two, how did he transform himself into thinking that he's superior? Based on the testimonies, that's what we're seeing. We get the profile of someone that became highly narcissistic, someone that became corrupted by power. And that's the point, that often when we get into these positions, Jim, of where we get power, we start to get into a place of arrogance, superiority. We get into the place where we feel the rules no longer apply to us, and we start to lose our sense of humility and our sense that we're always a student. Anyone that thinks they're always a teacher is going to be suffering at one point, because even though, obviously, I'm teaching right in this moment, I also believe that I'm a student. I need to be a student of my own teachings. I can't profess to know everything, so I have to be open so that I can keep learning. And this is the mistake, Jim, that so many people make. And we need to be careful even in our own situation of, once we rise to the position of power, how is that changing us? And it's not an easy thing to monitor. It happens to celebrities. It's happening right now to Charlie Sheen, where he's lost all sense of connection to other people, of responsibility and accountability. For example, he's a father. He's obviously not in a position to take care of his children if he's hanging around with prostitutes and if in the past he was doing drugs.
Yeah. And I don't know if they were porn stars. I don't know if they were prostitutes, but I think they were porn stars.
Well, one might argue that a porn star is a prostitute because she's paid to have sex. But
okay.
Having said that, you might say to me, well, he wasn't paying them to have sex. But in New York, the story was that, yes, he was with an escort.
Okay.
But regardless, he has openly said that he uses the services of escorts and prostitutes. He doesn't have a problem with. But that's not the point.
I can't imagine what that impact is going to be on his kids, though, you know, later on in life. I mean, I can't imagine that would be a positive.
Well, you're a father, so think about it from your perspective. Your child is...
Well, no, I think I have to think about it from my kids' perspective, because my perspective doesn't matter.
Right.
You know?
But as a father thinking about your kids' perspective, what effect do you think it would have?
A negative one.
Right. Particularly when you're giving all your you're not even giving attention and love to your mother or to your wife, to the mother of your child. You're giving it to these other external women, and you're giving it in a way that isn't going to be teaching the child how to love or how to have a healthy dynamic and relationship with a woman, and most likely encourages them to see women as sexual objects, particularly when you're talking about porn actresses. But nonetheless, we still come back to the point of how power and maybe even fame and fortune transformed James Arthur Ray. That's the point worth considering. And then we say, well, how can I apply that to my life? What can I learn from that? How can my success transform me into someone that I don't want to be? And the only way you can be aware of that is if you choose to be aware. But when you start to play roles like I'm God, then you're no longer a teacher, Now you're making it all about you. That's very different to saying to someone, you need to shed your old skin. You need to let go of the past. You need to live in the present moment. You need to build a new future. That's very different to saying, I'm God and you need to die and then you need to be reborn.
Yeah. You know, I think the media plays a big role in a lot of this, Patrick. I mean, I think that, you know, it's almost like, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, these guys start drinking their own Kool-Aid and you know, they start showing up on all these TV shows, and the next thing you know, they think that they're, you know, larger than life, and all of a sudden, you know, they can, you know, they get that celebrity type aura about them, or so-called aura about them, and people recognize them everywhere they go, and so therefore they feel that, you know, that they're a little bit different than the rest of us other folks out there that put on our pants one leg at a time.
And that plays into how we create gurus, how we create people based on our perceptions of them. So, you know, James Arthur Ray was featured on Oprah. He was featured on Larry King and numerous other TV shows. We've seen him as a New York Times bestselling author. He's featured on The Secret. Now we think he must have something I don't have. There must be some way he can help me. He's a guru. He's better than me. Or I have what he wants. Or I want to be like him. And it's okay sometimes to say, look, I see someone as a role model and there are certain things I want to emulate. But with James Arthur, it was an extreme because in many ways, one would argue that it was a cult. The moment that you find someone and you make that person a guru and you give your power to that person, and the moment you start to engage in physically dangerous activity, it becomes a cult. Because you've lost control of yourself. You've lost your power. And even though, obviously, the participants who are engineers and doctors and salespeople and small business owners would never want to say, oh, we were part of a cult, we were brainwashed, you have to say to yourself, well, how did you allow yourself to get in this situation? At what point did you not realize that you were sick and did you not step out immediately? They were in that sweat lodge for 2.5 hours. I think it was something between 6 and 8 rounds, meaning they would keep bringing in more volcanic rocks to intensify the heat and to increase the heat. At some stage, when you have no fear of what James Ray or anyone else will think or say about you, you are smart enough or cognizant enough to realize, I'm in physical danger. My heart rate is elevated. I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. I need to get out. I don't care what anyone thinks or says. I don't care what I paid for this course. So, yes, I would argue that it was very close to a cult. And then you have to say to yourself, how is what happened out in Arizona with James Ray and his participants and his spiritual warrior retreat any different to other cults or other extreme religious cults or other extreme religious fanaticism? When you're getting people to do things that are dangerous for them, dangerous right. to them. And that's where I think we need to be careful in the future of, again, I'll say it so many times, putting other people on pedestals, giving our power to them, letting them decide what we should do. That was no different to the Jonestown massacre, which was over 30 years ago, I think 31, 32 years ago now, where the people followed this guy and they followed them to their death. And there were many children amongst them that died. So I teach, listen to the teaching, don't worship the teacher, because every single teacher you can think of will prove to you that they're human and they make mistakes and they're fallible. Whether it's Anthony Robbins, who's one of the greatest motivational speakers and trainers of all time, who was teaching relationship courses but divorced his first wife after, I believe, 15 years. So obviously he's not perfect. The same applies to James Arthur Ray, and the same would apply to every single guru that you can pull up. Pull up the name of any guru, Deepak Chopra, anyone, and you know that we will find things that will prove to us that they're humans.
Yeah, it's almost like when we choose a president. I mean, every time we choose a president, they're always trying to, you know, pull them down, and you know they're mistake prone, and just like everybody else.
Right, and this is why we need to focus on the teaching and the message, not on the actual person. And even though we are focusing on the teaching and the message, we still need to keep an open mind. That's the most important point. You still need to keep an open mind. And I recently put a press release about that very thing, about the danger of gurus, that one of the lessons is seek the truth. Keep seeking the truth.
Yep. So where is this guy in his trial right now? Are they in the middle of the trial right now?
Very, very early stages, Jim. Very early stages of the trial. It's been going on for less than a week.
And how long will it go?
That's a good question. I think there's still a long way to go because they haven't even brought up, you know, medical experts yet or... there's a lot of other witnesses to come. Right now, they're just speaking to the witnesses, to some of the actual, you know, witnesses, but they haven't brought in any of the medical experts yet as witnesses.
Right.
Or to give their, not as witnesses, rather, but to give their testimony. So there is a long way to go. But again, my point with all of this, Jim, is to say we need to be careful of the way we give away our power. And the best way to do that is to be aware, to stop seeking other people's approval, and to stop thinking all the time that you need to be better. It's okay to seek the truth, but be careful of always giving away your power. That's the greatest danger, I think. I don't know if you have a thought to go with that.
No, you know, I've been through some personal development programs and camps and courses and you know, and yes, I totally agree with you. You know, there is a moment where you do, I don't want to call it surrender, but where you do open your mind to, you know, other possibilities. And in doing that, you have to be okay with, taking some risks. Now, that said, at the same time, you don't want to be taking risks that are absolutely foolish and where you're going to, you know, hurt yourself. And I understand that there's the, you know, that we've all got to break through barriers of fear, and because once we can break through the fear, a lot of times we can move forward in many different areas of our lives. So that's, you know, I think that's definitely important.
One of the key points is to be aware when you're in a vulnerable phase or stage of your life. Because when you are in that vulnerable phase in your life, you can easily fall victim to a cult or a guru. I'm sure that everyone listening may have at some stage in life felt that they were conned and said, well, how could I have been so stupid? How could I have been conned like that? Every one of us has emotional needs, significance, attention, a safe, secure environment to mature and develop, the desire for an emotional connection to other people, acceptance.
Oh yeah, you see that a lot of times where people after they break up, they bump into somebody else that is just, you know, probably the wrong person at the right time, and they're either taken advantage of or it doesn't turn out to be a great relationship.
Well, that's what we talk about vulnerability. Vulnerability means that you are feeling weak. And you can easily be led by someone else. And if you are seeking a meaning and purpose in your life, or you're suffering from any of these other things that I said, you don't feel significant, you're not getting attention, you don't feel that you're growing, you don't feel you have an emotional connection to other people, you don't feel you have a connection to the wider community, you're seeking acceptance. If you are in that position and you're not feeling that those needs are met, all you need is someone to come along and say, I have the answer for you. I can help you. I can give you what you need. I can solve your problems. And that's the grave mistake that we all too often make. When we look for someone else to solve our problems, then we no longer just look for hope. We're looking to a godlike kind of person, the person that has the secret to what we need. So be careful of anyone who claims, I have the secret or I can solve all of your problems. people might have solutions, but they can never solve all of your problems. And just in closing, I wanted to make this point because some people will say, well, you know, James Ray was with the New Age people and he didn't belong to, you know, one of the big religions, or, you know, maybe he's, you know, he's not Christian, or whatever other judgments we might make. And we need to remember that even Billy Graham, who's the evangelist, he was number 7 on the Gallup poll's list of admired people for the 21st century. He apologized for anti-Semitic remarks decades after it was revealed that he, in private meetings with the then President Nixon, called the Jews the synagogue of Satan. Hmm. And I'm bringing that up to say, be careful anytime you think that someone is perfect, that someone is godlike. None of us are godlike. Yes, look up to people, but look up to aspects of them. Don't look up to the whole person, because everyone, when they're truly revealed, will be revealed with flaws, insecurities, and self-doubt. And I'm happy to say the same thing applies to me.
Yep. Patrick, I think you're 100% on target.
I make no claims of perfection, Jim, or superiority. All I say is I have some insights, I have a message, look at it. Does it
and
apply
I've got some
life?
Experience.
And
you know, take what you like and leave the rest.
Right. And in time, as you become ready, you might hear something new in the message that you didn't hear the first time round.
Yep.
But again, if people want to learn more about what we talked about in the first interview, the dangers of gurus, they can find that on your website and also mine.
Yep, and the website is patrickwanis.com, W-A-N-I-S, and you can find the interview also on mysuccessgateway.com. This is Jim Peake closing out a podcast interview with human behavior expert Patrick Wanis, Ph.D. Thanks very much, Patrick.
Thanks, Jim.